Blog Talk Radio.
Satellite Guys Radio presents another edition of Satellite Nation with your hosts, Michael and Dave. We look forward to taking your calls. Do you have a comment for the show? Or maybe you have a question for us? If so, we look forward to your call at 877-SAT-GUYS. That is 877-728-4897. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Satellite Nation. We're a little bit chaotic tonight. We're not on Sock Guys Radio. I post that in the forum. So you can go there and, I guess you won't be listening to me if you're not on radio, but a little bit chaotic tonight.
I'm in a box truck right now. I didn't have time to get to the office yet. Start the stream.
Yeah, where are you at, Dave?
I'm on 54 getting ready to pass the Kentucky State Capitol.
Yeah, I can tell you're breaking up. How far are you from, about an hour or so from your house or from your office?
Probably about 45 minutes.
Oh, well, if you hurry, you can.
We can get the last 15 minutes on.
Yeah. But anyway, we just thought about canceling the show. We decided to go on with it, and so here we are. I did try to get hold of Scott. And, here's Scott now calling in. I think. Here we go. Hello, Scott.
Hey, guys. Howdy, howdy.
Hey, what's up, man?
Oh, what a day.
Yeah, it's what a day,
All righty. Yep, lots going on in the satellite world today. And, Tripp, are you on the line?
Yeah, Tripp's here.
All right.
Yeah.
Good to finally talk to you.
Yes, indeed.
I'm going to ask you later how your outcome was of your satellite dish at your new house.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you all about that.
That should be a good one. If you guys don't mind, I'm going to start off with some Team Summit news, because I know a lot of people are tuning in.
That's what I was going to ask about. What do we got?
The big news today was... I don't know if it was really a big surprise or not a big surprise. I think I knew about it about 5 weeks ago. But Dish is going to be offering every new subscriber who signs up for Dish Network and gets a qualifying package, which is basically America's Top 150 or higher, and a Dish Hopper will get a free iPad 2 as part of their service. There's the key, actually. So an iPad 2, so that way they can watch Dish anywhere. Anyway, you got a Wi-Fi connection anyways, because the iPad that is coming with it is an iPad 2, and it's a Wi-Fi-only edition. So it doesn't have 4G support or any kind of Internet support on it outside the house. So you do need a Wi-Fi connection to watch TV on it. But it's a $399 deal for free, so it ain't that bad.
Yeah, can't beat that.
No.
And that was the biggest news coming out of Team Summit.
So now, if you get that, you still got you forego the credits, though, right, for the first year?
That's correct. Instead of getting the special credit price, you get that the iPad free. And again, it's the iPad 2. It's not the iPad, the current generation, which is actually the iPad 4. It
right.
does not feature the Retina display. It does not support Siri. So it's an older model unit, but it's functional for all the Dish things. And it's kind of interesting to me that it appears that Dish is working with Apple on this, and Apple's the one actually fulfilling all the orders.
Huh.
I was going to ask that. I was wondering if they bought it off of a distributor or if they were actually working with Apple, so they are.
Yeah, Apple's actually shipping the orders directly, and it comes with 1-year warranty and also a 3-month AppleCare extension on it from Apple.
Oh, wow.
So that was kind of a neat thing there today. The other big news coming out of Team Summit is for all the Android fans out there. Hopper with Sling will soon be able to transfer videos to your Android device. And currently it's only been to the iPad.
Right.
But pretty soon. And it's been in beta for a while, so I'm expecting it out of beta relatively soon. I'm expecting to see it released really soon, where you can go and do that. So if you got a Hopper with Sling, you can now transfer to your Android once the software comes out. And again, I'm expecting that within weeks, if not sooner.
We're getting our caller, guys. Let's see who we got online. Yep, there you go. You're online.
Hey, guys. It's Dan again.
Hey, Dan.
I thought that was you.
It's your favorite caller.
Yeah, I started to say it's Dan, but later it goes 260 where you go, but let me just wait and see.
Hey, I got a question to ask you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Last week you said something about heating, wanting to cool the LNB. Were you having trouble trying to cool an LNB?
They were talking about the PLL LNB, how it heats up.
I figured out a way to cool it. What's that? Without using heat, like a thermal pile or any like solar panels, figured out a way.
Okay.
How's that?
Yeah, it's powered by your receiver, actually.
Oh, okay.
You take your power from your receiver, and you can cool it. I got
how's
the design and everything. I got the designs and everything.
You need to post that up on the board.
Okay. Well, it's
is it copyrighted or?
Yeah. What it is, it's going to be taking a heater core and running a tube around the LNB to cool it, like when you have a like a.
Like a heat pump.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Just like a heat pump.
But you take a motor out, like the satellite, the dish motor.
Yeah.
And take that setup, take the motor part, like where you're a dish mover, you're not moving the dish, you can control the pump. So you can turn the pump on by your receiver.
Oh, that's interesting.
And turn it on and off, and then it circulates the coolant around the LNB, and it sends it back to a heater core from a car, and then it goes right back up to the pump.
That's interesting. I don't know where, I guess unless you live in Arizona or Southern California, where you really need that, but even then, it's still interesting.
Yeah, it's all controlled by your receiver. I'm sorry. Oh, a little bit.
But, Dan, let's stand by a little bit there. We got a guest on tonight, Trip MVA on satellite guys. He used to work for Lucas Communications and stuff. So we want to pick his brain a little bit and let him talk a little bit here while we got him on here.
One more thing from Team Summit, if I may. The other thing was shown at Team Summit, but not really announced, is they're testing an app on the LG televisions that feature smart TV features, is using your TV as a Joey, so you don't need a Joey box. The TV acts as a Joey.
Cool.
Now, I asked about this, and the application itself is basically a web script, and the TV is not doing any processing from the hopper itself. The hopper is what's sending the signal across. So it's not going to be slow like RVU client is, such as DirecTV, where the TV is doing the processing, the decoding, and everything else like that. It's just basically doing a web stream from the hopper. And they're testing that out, and everybody's saying it looks really, really good. So that's a cool thing. And they're talking about rolling it out to all smart TVs. The only question I have now is, what will it cost per month to use that feature? Or will it be a free feature, which, knowing Dish Network, I would say you got a better chance of getting the $360 million Powerball tonight than getting
a free. Exactly. Yeah, I've seen that. I thought that's pretty cool. That, you know, with everything getting the way it's getting now, you know, it's definitely possible.
Yeah, it's a neat thing, and I don't know how to keep making these hopper boxes better, but they're doing a good job at it.
Yeah. I don't own one myself. I've seen one and played with it. They're really cool. I'm still on 722K, but at the house.
And if you do want to get... I'm sorry?
I was going to say, you know, I was thinking about it, and the way they might do it is where you get so many streams per box, so it doesn't matter what TVs you have. You can just watch, you know, one stream or two streams, and they'll charge you, like, $7 per extra stream or something like that.
Yeah, they'll figure out a way to charge you. I'm sure of that. As I say, it's Dish Network. They like charging you for things that they shouldn't be charging you for.
At least you're honest about it. I never did agree with with any of them, any provider charging for DVR, but especially if you own it, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. They got away from the owning thing, so no matter what, you're still paying the extra outlet fee.
Right.
You know, it was money sitting on the table, so I can understand from a business standpoint why he did it. But for me as a consumer, just looking at my bill just for equipment fees per month is as much as my programming fees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
I must
have
one point.
The trigger on that new box you're looking at?
I'm sorry?
What was that, Dave?
The trigger on that new satellite box you're looking at?
The alien?
Yeah.
I actually got an alien coming to me. It should be here on Friday. And I don't know when I get a chance to play with it because we're still doing a bunch of construction and fixing up the house over here. And on the weekends is the only 2 days I got off from my real job. So I'm, you know, busy painting and sanding and cleaning up. And this weekend we're pulling out a bunch of trees and things like that. So hopefully I get to play with it soon. But
I'm looking for a full review.
Yeah, I plan on doing a full review as I can do.
Scott's review.
my C-band dish is a little funky, as people know. So if you keep that in mind, it'll be okay. But I was talking with Joe from Fridge Free to Air about it, and it sounds like it will do what I want it to do.
Oh, cool! I was wondering about that.
Yeah. So he. Said, well, do what I want it to do. He said there are bugs in it. Sometimes it won't go to the KU satellite when you want it to go to the KU satellite, and you have to reset the box. But after you reset the box, everything's fine, and it separates between the two tuners.
Right.
But other than that, he said it should do what I want, you know, pretty well. So I'm kind of excited about it. It's an all-in-one box where you can go back and forth. And the reason I'm looking for an all-in-one box is because I like fooling with the Internet TV stuff. And in looking at the Alien 2, it's got most of the internet video feeds I want to get.
Yeah.
So if I throw it all in one box and get rid of three boxes, that's a good thing.
All right.
So, you know, I'm still going to keep one of the micro HDs around or both of the micro HDs around, but I want to try simplifying my TV because I've got a big pile of boxes on it.
It's probably like me.
Yeah. And, but one of these weekends, Joe's an interesting character from Fridge Free to Air. Fridge Free to Air is another forum site. And not too bad a guy. And hopefully one of these weeks we can actually get him on Satellite Nation to talk about his boxes, because he's actually the exclusive distributor of these boxes in the United States, and he's worked hard to bring them in and also to write the software for the North American market. Because if you've got one of these Alien 2s in Europe, it would have totally different software on it. He's totally customized it for North America, and that's a really cool thing.
Well, Scott, that's your homework for now. That's your mission. You've got to get a hold of him and then get a hold of me, because I have scheduled shows and see. We'll get him on.
Yeah, we'll get him on. I talked to him about it already. He'd be happy to do it, and that would be a great thing there. It's actually good to see the free-to-air community starting to work together with each other.
Yeah.
One more thing before I turn it over to Trip, because after our show tonight on Sat Talk with Mike Cole and Ralph Black, they're having a special show tonight where they're actually going to try doing video.
Yeah.
And I posted the URL in the free to air section for people to click on and watch the video of Ralph and Mike. And it's actually the first time I've seen Ralph. Ralph was screwing around with it this morning. And Ralph looks nothing like I imagined him to look like.
Oh, I'm going to have to check that out. Actually, funny, I helped Mr. Mike Cole set up his internet link. He's got a wireless link, and he's using some Ubiquiti adapters. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, Mike Cole is one of the definite legends in satellite. I mean, he's a true pioneer.
He's
been there from the beginning. And I've had the chance to sit down and you know, have dinner with him. I've had the chance to sit down and just talk with him for hours and hours and hours and hours. And the story this guy can tell you, and they're not fishing stories. These are just true stories about things that have gone down in the satellite industry. And some of them will have your head spinning. And a really interesting person to talk to and to pick his brain. He's a great guy.
Oh, yeah, he's a smart puppy.
So that's at 9 o'clock. Hopefully we're off the air by then. But if not, click on watch the video, turn your audio off, listen to us, and turn our audio off when we're done and listen to Ralph and Mike. So now I understand we got Tripp on the line. And Tripp is the creator of RabbitEars.com. And so tell us a little bit about Rabbit Ears.
It's RabbitEars.info.
That info, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sitting outside where it's not noisy.
all the good names were taken, so I had to go with the .info instead of a .com or something.
And how did you go with Rabbit Ears? Tell us a bit about how you came up with it and what its function is.
Yeah, introduce yourself first a little bit and then go from there.
Well, Rabbit Ears is a website about over-the-air television with an antenna. I started it, it dates to 2004, which is right after the previous TV website, 100,000watts.com, was sold to Clear Channel and became subscription-only. I decided that there needed to be a replacement. Of course, in 2004, I was in high school and had no idea how to program anything, so it sort of just faded away. In 2008, I started keeping a list of the digital TV sub-channels, but I kept it on the Rabbit Ears domain. The problem was people were clicking around at the other pages that weren't done and trying to send me corrections. I posted a notice and I said, please stop sending me updates unless you want to help me code a website. And sure enough, somebody came out of the woodwork and offered to help me code a website. He did most of the work. His name is Bruce Myers. And a month later, on April 14th, 2008, Rabbit Ears launched. And ever since then, he's taught me how to do it. I've reverse engineered the code he's written, and now I do pretty much all the work on it. But of course, to get the updates, I have a team of volunteers across the country who help and send me updates, particularly to the sub-channel information. And I pull in various databases, the FCC database, the Canadian TV database, the tower database, the FCC's ASR, Antenna Structure Registration Database, and some of these other data sources, and I pull them together into an interface that I hope people can figure out how to use.
Hmm. And I noticed on some of the stations you have actual TS reader information as well. How do you obtain that? Is that sent in by the contributors as well?
Yeah, basically. It mostly comes from volunteers. I have a few people who sort of, they live in places, and as things get updated, they send me updates. One of those people is a gentleman named David who writes the Arizona station update that appears on the front page of the website. He likes to travel, and he travels around the state of Arizona. And every time something changes, he usually knows within a week and sends it my way along with a TS Reader update. As far as TS Reader goes, I have more than 2,800 unique transmitters worth of data, some of which dates to 2008. I've been trying to get myself up to date, but there are just some areas where it's hard to get data. For those who don't know, the TS Reader output data basically gives you the bit rates, so you know how good the video quality is, and gives you other parameters of the signal, some of which can be helpful for troubleshooting problems at the transmission end of things.
Yeah, like screwed up piece of data.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised how often I see things like that, and even more surprised at how often I call stations up to offer them assistance, and then they ignore me.
Yeah, that's normal for TV stations today. If you want to speak to an engineer, you might as well, you know, put on a hat that says engineer written in backwards and then look in the mirror, and that's the only engineer you're going to talk to, because TV stations don't want to talk to anybody.
Well, what's funny, sometimes I get to the engineers, and there's basically two distinctions. If I tell them I'm the guy who runs Rabbit Ears and they know what Rabbit Ears is, they listen. If they don't know, they don't listen. That's basically how it seems to go.
Yeah. Well, I remember when HD started becoming mainstream and digital transmission, the digital transmission started up, and a couple of the stations here in Connecticut were having issues, and I called them up because I knew what was causing it. And wanted to speak to them, and the engineer told me that it was new technology and they'll fix it sooner or later, and thank you for my call and hung up on me.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too surprising to me. But let me follow that up by saying that there are a lot of good engineers who do great work, and I get to talk to a fair number of them. People who, you know, there are engineers at stations who send me updates for the other stations in their market. There's, you know, engineers who send me, you know, I've had some who will actually look at their encoder and send me their encoder settings so that when, when I say, you know, this station is variable bit rate, I actually know the exact range that they have set on their encoder. So, you know, there's the whole spectrum from the people, some stations don't even have an engineer, to the engineers who do really, you know, top-notch, great sort of stuff.
Now, with digital television, the way it's going now, at least here in my area, I'm starting to see more and more digital sub-channels pop up. Is that the trend around the United States, or is that something just unique here in the Connecticut area?
No, there are more of them, and more of them continue to launch. And a lot of that has to do with encoder technology improving. I mean, we're going to get to a point where MPEG-2 can't be improved anymore, but we're not really there yet. And as that improvement occurs and the HD takes up less and less of the space while holding the quality constant, you're going to see more of these channels pop up. You know, just this year, you know, there's going to be Soul of the South, New African American Network, if it launches. This is their seventh launch date. The new Fox-owned Fox and Weigel partnership, the Movies Network, that's supposed to launch Memorial Day. There's Sony Pictures' Get TV that's going to launch on the various Univision stations. And, you know, there's other networks in the pipeline as well. And Weigel, of course, is the parent behind MeTV and until recently this TV. There's more coming.
Now this TV has been sold to Tribune, or Tribune owned it? And
what happened was it was a partnership between MGM and Weigel, and apparently Tribune bought Weigel's share or something. And so in Chicago, for instance, this TV is moving from WCIU over to WGN, which is owned by Tribune. And it's believed, I haven't heard any confirmation, but it's believed that it's related to the launch of Movies, which is the partnership, again, between Weigel and Fox.
Interesting. Here in Connecticut, we actually have two Tribune stations, which is kind of unusual. And it's also unusual because Tribune also owns the newspaper in the big newspaper, which is Hartford Courant. And a lot of people are upset about that because they think that Tribune has too much media control now in Connecticut, because it's all Hartford Courant and their TV stations. If you read the paper, it's all pointing to the TV stations, and if you watch TV stations, it's all pointing to the back of the Hartford Courant. So a lot of people are upset in trying to get this dual ownership taken away from them.
Hey, guys, we got a caller. Let's see.
Hey, caller.
Let's put the caller online and see who we got here.
All right.
Caller,
hey, Tripp, this is Brian. This is Brian Cole.
Brian,
how you doing, Tripp?
Hi, I'm doing all right.
Hey, missed you at the last convention, but congratulations on the new job. I do have a question about the ATSC, the new version that's been announced.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if, well, no, it's and it's advanced, which will give what, correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to be increased resolution, different encoding, et cetera. I'm just kind of curious if this will be any mandates put on that implementation by the FCC, or will this just be kind of a consumer demand AM/FM AM stereo type thing?
I would say it's too early to tell at this point. Too early to tell. For those who don't know, there's talk at this point of an ATSC 3.0 standard. Now you may say to yourself, we haven't had 2.0 yet. 2.0 is basically changing from MPEG 2 to MPEG 4. ATSC 3.0 would be basically another conversion. You'd have a new set of boxes because you would be changing the modulation scheme. So right now, you can fit 19.39 megabits per second through an over-the-air channel. With ATSC 3.0, you would theoretically get something in the neighborhood of 30. And the video would be improved from MPEG 2 to the new HEVC, which was ratified earlier this year. The presentations that I have heard and seen, or that I heard and saw last year, speculated that you could fit 6 to 8 HD video feeds on a single over-the-air channel using ATSC 3.0. Of course, the standard does not exist yet, that remains to be seen. I suspect that any move toward a transition on this front will largely be driven by broadcasters who don't want to be left behind. There are a lot of people, myself included, who will note the fact that ATSC was 15 years old when we did the transition. And you look at technologies like 3G or 4G, or LTE that are, brand new by comparison. And the broadcasters look like they've got horses and buggies. The system works okay. ATSC didn't work too well when it started. The chips have sort of improved over time to the point where they're not bad. I mean, ATSC could be better. It could be a lot worse. I had one of the original tuners, and it was a lot worse.
Now, is this any improvement on the mobile side of things? Because right now at ATSC, you can't do mobile, be driving in your car and have a backseat TV.
Yeah. One of the ATSC 3.0 features was supposed to be that I heard was they were talking about trying to make it LTE compatible so that you could have a single radio in the tuner and pick up the broadcasts over the air that way. And the idea was to have at least one layer of it be mobile friendly. I guess the best comparison, and I could be mistaken about this, don't take my word for it. The best comparison I think would be more like the Japanese standard where you've sort of got the signal broken into segments and the mobile is on one of those 13 segments that's in the channel, and it just happens to be much more robust than the other sections.
Another thing I'd like to see. Oops, sorry, Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, just as a follow-up trip, do you think this will just kind of force the hand in people, because mobile and cellular is so much more entrenched? Do you think that this actually might cause a walk away from the ATSC standard, and people just kind of skip it and say, "Hey, we'll go cellular"?
Is it possible? Yes. Is it likely? I don't think so. I feel like ATSC is the broadcast standard. I talked to some people who think that the EMBEMS, that's not the acronym, but there's an acronym for broadcasting video over LTE. That's been talked about as a possibility. The real problem that comes from this is broadcasters are sort of used to having, it's sort of the difference between the cellular and the broadcast. The broadcaster is used to the sort of the one-stick approach where they have the one really powerful transmitter and that's it. Whereas something like an LTE, you would have to have basically a cellular network for each broadcaster unless they formed like a consortium in their market. In some markets that may be feasible. In others, I know it's not because broadcasters hate each other. So I sort of don't see the broadcasters wanting to take on the task of operating a bunch of different transmitters, which would be necessary for sort of going to an LTE, a complete conversion to LTE. Something that LTE radios can decode, sure. Something that's, full-blown LTE, I'm somewhat hesitant to say that I see that in the future.
But even skipping that and just going to a provider, picking it up and just using existing cellular, you know, we're seeing quite an advance with 5G now, where it actually could probably handle the bandwidth and deliver HD content and just bypass any additional build-outs.
Well, it could be done. I mean, if you've been following the tech press at all, you see announcements about, like, SyncBack, who actually – I work relatively closely with the SyncBack people with Rabbit Ears. They make extensive use of it, and in return they provide me with TS reader captures. But SyncBack, for instance, is somebody who's talking about doing basically internet streaming of the local television station. And that's certainly one way to go. The problem at that point is that then broadcasters become basically content providers. They don't have control over the pipe. They have they have control over their own content, but they are presumably paying somebody else to provide it.
They want the provider to pay them for it to provide it.
They don't want to have to pay Verizon or AT&T or whoever to carry a signal that right now, you know, they can provide to everybody basically, you know, at the cost of electricity and the sunk cost of a build out of a transmitter. Because the only recurring cost at that point is basically the power bill. Whereas the recurring cost could be extensive data fees to, you know, every cell phone provider who wants to participate.
Yeah, I'm thinking in terms of Aereo, how they're not paying retransmission fees and the big fight going on there, which is a whole different ball game altogether. But broadcasting over LTE, I would expect the TV stations to want the providers to pay them for their signal in order to retransmit it. But
ESPN is talking to Verizon to pay Verizon a flat fee, where ESPN users could get the content from Verizon without it coming off their data limit?
I saw that, but how does that affect net neutrality? Because now you're segregating data, so that way people who are using ESPN are not getting charged for data, but people going to Fox Sports are being charged for the data. That's a whole different ball of wax there and a big problem.
Yeah,
is that already happening, though, in Comcast, where they are going to be allowing people with their video service unlimited data, but if you're using it for any other video service, it's going to be metered?
Yeah, and the problem there, again, is the whole net neutrality thing. They're going to have a problem with it, especially Comcast is being closely watched because, you know, they own NBC and they own half the cable networks that are up there now.
Some interesting times ahead, that's for sure. Well, thanks. I'm just going to go off to the side and kind of listen in, but I just kind of had a couple questions there for you, Tripp. Good to hear you again, and I'll be enjoying the rest of the show.
Thanks, Brian, and you did a great job last week. It was good having you on.
Having fun. Okay, guys, talk to you later.
Now, Tripp, if they did use another format, you know, ATSC version 3.0, if it were me, I'd like to see in that standard support for 2160p, Ultra HD, 4K, whatever they're going to, you know, call it. Has there been any talks that you've seen yet about a broadcast standard for 4K content?
It's come up as being one of the features that ATSC 3.0 would need to have. I haven't been following the discussion closely enough to tell you any specifics about, you know, what inclusions may be. That said, I do know that HEVC compression will be required to do it. I also know that the encoders right now, the computers and the encoders are not fast enough to do it real time. To encode HEVC takes about 4 times real time at the moment.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. I was browsing the internet the other day, and there's this website, and I'm not going to name the website, but they claim they have this new subscription box coming out sometime this year, and their new box does 2160p Ultra HD 4K. I'm trying to figure out how they do that yet when there's no broadcast standard, even on satellite, for broadcasting the Ultra HD content. And I had to laugh at that one.
Your guess is as good as mine.
So you, just to change the subject here a little bit, you actually got to do some interesting work in the satellite field over the last year. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I just changed jobs a few months ago, but prior to that job change, I worked for Lucan Communications, parent company of Retro TV, TNN, My Family, Tough TV, PBJ, Frost Great Outdoors, and some others I'm probably slipping on right now.
Yeah, that must have been a fun but stressful project launching the new TNN.
Yeah, I was very pleased that I was there when TNN launched. I was there that evening. I actually had just gotten back from a road trip that evening, and I hung out at the studio until about 3 in the morning because it was a midnight launch. And it was very fun to see. And of course it was one of these things where, you know, you always think you've given yourself enough time to get a launch done smoothly. And you still wind up working till the last minute trying to make it perfect. And, you know, there was one of our guys at, 11:30 PM, still working on trying to make it perfect, you know? But it launched successfully. We've had very good response. It's worked. I still say we. I apologize.
Well, it's okay. You were part of it, so it was we.
Yeah. It's had very good response, and it's, you know, TNN is basically, in a lot of ways, it's what's going to carry Lucan in the future.
Yeah, I wish I could pick it up on my little 8-foot dish. I have so much trouble with it, and... So don't look for that in my LM review.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the trade-off that you have to make. You know, we're trying to make the maximum use of the satellite bandwidth Lucan's trying to make the maximum use of satellite bandwidth they have. You know, and so they do DVB-S2 with 5/6 FEC. It's very difficult to receive. But that said, you know, for the TV station with the proper dish and equipment, you know, it's you know, the link budget works. It's, you know, a reliable feed when you have, you know, the big enough dish. And it allows, you know, all of the feeds to be fit on one transponder, which is very important. The bill for satellite space is very high. I don't know the exact number, but I will say that for the space that Lucan has, it's in the six figures per month. So trying to fit as much into that space as possible is very important. And that said, yes, it's a challenge for the home viewer, and, you know, that's sort of understood. But at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, what makes financial sense.
And that's the whole thing. People got to understand that it's a business and you're trying to make money on it. They're not trying to aim for us home satellite dish owners. If we can get it, they're happy that we can watch it, but if we can't get it, it's still business as usual for them.
Yeah, I mean, the target is really the terrestrial broadcaster who's going to pick it up. You know, the free-to-air viewer, you know, from our perspective, is a bonus. You know, it's not a bad thing. If it was, it would be encrypted. It's not a bad thing, but it's also not something that can be supported. This sort of goes back. I wanted to at least take a moment. You know, there's sort of the rule on message boards, like satellite guys, that say never, ever call the network provider. And that's really very true, because while the free-to-air viewers are very much appreciated, you know, the people, you know, whether they're the receptionist at the front desk or, you know, the technical staff, because, you know, the phone number, you know, does sometimes get listed in various places, all of those people, you know, especially the technical staff, you know, are trained specifically, you know, to deal with the transmission and to provide support to the affiliates. You know, if we're tied up on the phone with home viewers who represent, you know, a single household, you know, that's time away from the affiliates who might represent a million households.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always told people that, and hopefully most people listen. Now, I know Mr. Lucan knows that we're out here because I've received emails from him. In fact, he's given me his number and told me to call him a couple times.
And, you know, he's very pleased. He was actually, when the old RTV or RTN was up, he was actually a regular poster on Satellite Guy under a different name. Hmm. And then weaned off that once him and his other partner broke up and he had to take more of a active role in running the company. So he's very, very, very much aware that we're out here, and he does enjoy the fact that we are watching. So that's a really cool thing.
I'd love to get him on the show.
Mr. Lucan has stepped away from it a little bit. He has a lot of different projects going on. And, you know, he does spend a fair amount of time at the communications company working on it, et cetera. You know, but he also does work in real estate, and he has golf courses, and he has a yacht. He owns a piece of a yacht company, and he does a lot of different things. And so the day-to-day operations are run by a gentleman named Matt Wynn, or they were when I left. And he's the guy who basically keeps the show going. And I have, you know, I work basically directly for him. I reported directly to him. I have nothing but nice things to say about him because he came from an engineering background, so he understood all the technical issues. When you would tell him a technical problem, his eyes wouldn't glaze over, which is very nice. You know, and at the same time, he was very good at business. You know, he was very good at, you know, we need to get this programming, you know, specifically for TNN. You know, we need to get this programming to be successful, and it has to be done in this way, and it has to look this good, and this, you know. He insisted on approving everything so that it looked perfect, you know, and that's you know, his I have nothing but nice things to say about him.
Well, that's a good thing, and that's a nice thing to say. So then you moved away from Lucan, and now you're in Washington, D.C., working for the SEC. Can you tell us just a little bit? I don't know how far you can divulge, but can you tell us a little bit about what you do at the SEC?
My title is electronics engineer, and what I do basically is I am in the technical analysis division, which is basically the analysis that does anything relating to analysis of signals. So, for example, what I'm working on is software to conduct interference analysis between TV stations, terrestrially.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of, you know, that's basically what I do. I'm looking at the software. We're trying to troubleshoot issues. It's effectively software development, but I'm not a programmer. I'm sort of the person finding the bugs and reporting the bugs to the developer, who then fixes them, and then I check them again against the, against the old software, effectively, and make sure it matches up. And then there's other things that I do along the way. I sort of help out where I can, because as you can probably tell, that's not the kind of thing that takes up 100% of the time. You know, so, for example, they were trying to come up with a list of network affiliations for some internal thing they were doing. And mm-hmm. I assist in coming up with that list because of my rabbit ears information. So I was able to help out in that regard, even though it's not specifically tied to my job title.
Now, have you ever got the chance to go and play in the testing room there where they have all the funny-shaped walls and the little stool in the middle and put the electronics down to see how much juice they're pumping out?
I have seen the room. I have not been in it.
I've seen a picture of it once. It looks really, really cool. It's just one of those neat things that somebody has to see.
I've got plenty to do up on the seventh floor at this point.
Now, because you moved from Lucan, which was in Tennessee, correct?
Mm-hmm.
To the SEC, did you move to the Virginia area or did you move to the Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, I live in Alexandria, Virginia. I grew up in Virginia from the time I was mm-hmm. six. I went to the University of Virginia, and until I moved to Tennessee to work at Lucan, I basically lived in Virginia. So I sort of jumped at the opportunity to return to my home state, even if I'm 4 hours away from home here.
Well, that's a good thing. And you posted something online, and we talked about this at the beginning of the show. You posted something where you moved in, you put your satellite dishes up, and you had a problem with a neighbor. I was wondering what the outcome of that was, and if you can give the listeners a little bit of background on that story.
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of background first. Basically, you know, I'm the TV person. You know, I want my free TV and I want it as soon as possible. I live on the 125 West PBS feed, and World Channel in particular is one of my favorites. And of course, guess what? The only sub channel is for PBS that's not available in DC, World Channel. So. When I got here, the first thing I did, of course, was put up my antenna in the backyard. The backyard faces northeast toward Washington. So, as you might expect, the front yard faces southwest toward the satellite. So the dish had to go in the front yard. About 2 weeks later, I had a neighbor come up to my door, and she didn't give her name or anything, but she was very, you know, she said, well, welcome to the neighborhood. And she says something to the effect of, so this dish here, you know, is this going to stay here? And I said, probably. You know, and there was sort of a back and forth, and she used a profane term to describe it. And then she said, well, you better do something about it, or I'm going to report it to the landlord in the county. And so at that point, you know, I said, thank you, I'll see what I can do. And then, you know, she walked off. So I wrote a letter, and I asked for the advice of my, you know, my friends, coworkers. I asked on the message board, and after I went through all that, I came to the conclusion I shouldn't send it. So I didn't send the letter. But what I did discover along the way was, of course, I already knew about the FCC's rule about dishes. But more to the point, I found the Fairfax County Code, because I live in Fairfax County, just outside of Alexandria, and it has a specific carve out that says, dishes under 1 meter in diameter can be placed on any lot in any yard. And so basically it spelled out that there was, you know, I was in the right and there was nothing that she could do. And suffice it to say, I haven't heard a word since. I'm assuming that she probably called the county and the county must have told her that there was nothing they could do, because I haven't heard a word.
Well, you know, you'd be surprised sometimes where people will do that and they're just trying to call your bluff and see what you'll do, but they actually don't go and do what they said they're going to do. They don't call the county, they don't worry. They're just hoping you'll obey them, you know what I mean? I mean, maybe that's not the proper word to use, but they're hoping you'll, you know, when they come in and bluff you, you'll go, oh, crap, and
I think she didn't do anything. Yeah, and I'm not the person, you know, I'm very good when I have preparation. If you had called me out of the blue and said, we're going to have you on the show, I'd be, you know, sitting here like a deer in the headlights. You know, so when she came to the door, I was sort of, you know, dumbstruck. I couldn't really say much of anything.
Right.
You know, because if I had, you know, I might have said, you know, well, you know, federal law indicates that I can have, I might have said something like that.
Right. You're not prepared, though. You're dumbfounded kind of for a second there.
Get lost and have a nice day.
Yeah, it was sort of one of those reactions where it's like, I don't even know what to say. I just need to get, you know, I need to get rid of her so I can think as soon as possible.
Right.
You know, that was sort of the reaction I had. But, you know, that's why I'm always better sort of with the written word, posting on message boards, writing letters, because I have a lot of time to think about it and make sure my words are perfect, which is why I wrote the letter. But then I didn't send it.
That's why it's hard to get you on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know.
But you're doing a good job. You're doing excellent. I mean, you're just like professional.
Yeah, I mean, and part of the, you know, I always worry when I write formally that I sound mean or I sound rude. And it's, you know, it's not that I'm trying to sound rude. It's that I'm trying to remove all, you know, I'm trying not to sound emotional about it. I'm trying to be strictly logical and factual. Here's the facts. Here's how it is. But some people just take that the wrong way, and I've encountered that before, and that's why that is ultimately the biggest reason I didn't send it, was because I didn't know, I didn't think I could strike the balance that was necessary.
Yeah, as the owner of Satellite Guys, you know, there's been plenty of times where I've written things and meant them in a totally happy, fun way and totally pissed off some people.
Yeah, we know that one.
Well, I've read some of your stuff, Scott. I'm like, what? Is he drinking tonight or what? That you would.
A lot of times when I'm writing, I've got like 8 windows open and I'm writing 8 different things at one time. And I go back and read what I wrote later, and I'm like, did I really write that like that? Man,
yeah.
I suck.
That's why I'm going to go edit your stuff.
Yeah, that's why I like message boards with an edit button.
Yeah.
Well, I got a staff. These are going to edit it for me.
Yeah. I do it all the time. Especially his grammar and his spelling.
Yeah, they go in there and the staff area and it says, yeah, we elfed your post. Hope you don't mind.
I don't even ask anymore. I just go do it. And I just say elf.
Oh, boy. Yeah, my dishes, both of them, I've got an 8-footer and a 4-footer in the front yard. And none of the neighbors have said anything about it, surprisingly. Well, I take that back. I got one neighbor next door who's one of the producers for SportsCenter on ESPN.
Ah.
And he told me a couple times, he said, sometimes I hate coming home because I think I'm back at work again. But other than that, that's the only comment I got about it. But
nobody said. My yard was 7 dishes in it, and one of my 10 dishes in it, and I changed it. I need to take a picture of it, but post it. But
nobody said boo to me, but I'm very active in the community. You know, I support the baseball teams and the little league teams, and, you know, I'm known in the area, so people don't really bug me about it, which is kind of good, so. That works
Dave,
out.
Dave, are you still with us, or you drop out?
Huh?
You won't Dave save up. Don't wake Dave up.
He's still showing he's with us, according to the control panel here, but I think he's...
I'm still here.
No, I'm talking about Dave.
Oh,
yeah, I'll be here. I just put it on mute because this truck is so loud. I just didn't want to mess anything up.
I did that.
I talk to aliens, apparently, according to my neighbors. I'm an alien because I have so many dishes.
I did that a couple times while ago. My pig got caught while ago and I had to put it on mute, so...
Hey guys.
Yeah.
Hey guys. The guy that was for the Rabbit Ears TV, and I think it was probably Brian. I was not trying to interrupt, but you guys said that there's not one channel that broadcasts in 4K. I thought NHK from Japan is the only one on satellite.
Well,
it's not a standardized format.
Oh, okay, but I was just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, wow. I mean, NHK sort of, you know, pioneered HD, but they did it in analog, and it was it was for demonstration purposes. What I was saying in my own comments were that the encoders that encode the new HEVC format are not capable of doing it in real time. So anything that you're seeing is basically pre-encoded. You can't do live.
Right.
And you can't do stuff that's uncompressed or things that are compressed in MPEG-2. The encoders are basically 4 times real time at this point.
Yeah, because all the TVs I saw at CES all had a little cursor at the bottom because it was all being played back on a computer for the 4K.
Man. This reminds me of when I started doing satellite radio shows. Back in the day, me and Gary Bourgeois, who just passed away a couple of years ago, used to do a show called Friday Night Live. And I owned an internet company here in Connecticut called North American Internet. And I started screwing around with audio stuff, and I was on a number of betas. In fact, I was a beta for real audio. But I was trying a bunch of different audio encoding. And to encode a one-hour show to rebroadcast on the internet at that time took over 8 hours of time to do.
Yeah.
And then each different release of the encoders came out, and it got shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And believe it or not, Real Audio sent me over a beta of Real Audio 0.9 beta, which was the first one to offer a live encoder.
Yeah.
And they said, don't screw with it yet. We're not really confident on the live stuff. Well, we were the first live radio broadcast on the internet with Friday Night Live, and the people from Real Audio were freaked out and excited at the same time that it actually worked.
Yeah.
It was a Friday Night Live with Gary Bourgeois. It was actually the first real live radio broadcast on the internet where people could actually tune in and listen live. And I think we had something like 60 listeners that night. I think we maxed out the license that they gave us. And
wow.
It was just really, really cool. And Just a fun fact there, and
was that the show where they would go on Sideband Audio 6.2?
He had a lot of different things that he did. You know, Friday Night Live was ultimately a 4-hour show.
Didn't he have like a TV repair business or something? And he ran it out of there.
He did all kinds of stuff. First, he owned a recording studio, and he did a popular comedy series called Flash Frisbone, and he sold that off, and then he kind of became like a hermit at his house, and that's how he gave him his email address at that time was Hermit, and then he, you know, because he just stayed at home, and he collected all this electronic crap, and boy, did he collect. But he was a great guy. Me and him used to spend hours on the phone. Back in those days, there was no unlimited long-distance calling, and my phone bill was like $400 or $500 a month just talking to Gary up in Marquette, Michigan. It was a great time. And we used to sit there, we used to scan the skies, and the fun stuff we saw, we used to see like raw feeds of, you know, all the different raw feeds. But the one I remember most is an ad for Dino Dump where you can buy dinosaur turds. And me and him both ran into this, and we were laughing and laughing and laughing at it. It was the most funniest thing we ever saw. And he's like, who the heck's going to order that? That was probably the funniest thing I've ever seen on satellite, someone actually selling what they can call the real petrified dinosaur turds.
Wow.
Yeah. But when I went North American Internet, after Gary running, I started putting Connecticut radio stations online and broadcasting them. And I was, you know, like a pioneer in it. And it was me and Mark Cuban. And Mark Cuban actually came in and took my radio station from me.
Because
he made him like this big offer. He made him this big offer because he owned AudioNet at the time. And Mark Cuban was like, oh, I'll make it up to you. You know, anytime you need, you know, hosting, I'll host your streams for free. I'll do all the stuff for you. And, you know, he became a billionaire and I became a poor guy.
What was it, broadcaster.com? He sold it to, was it Yahoo or something?
Yeah, sold it to Yahoo, yep. He sold it for like $2 billion.
Yahoo,
yep. And when I sold North America, I had partners too, but when we sold North American Internet, we sold enough to pay our costs because we updated all our modems to 56K modems. And we're basically keeping our heads above water just barely, and then we were purchased out there, so, you know, you get a better idea, I guess.
Yeah.
But that was my big love, and the big thing I did was put radio stations on the Internet, and it did a lot. I always thought it was kind of cool that you could be anywhere in the world and listen to your favorite radio station.
Yeah. Like I did at WIN every Wednesday morning.
But this was back when we were using dial-up modems, which made it even cooler.
Yeah, the streams, the original streams was, I think, 14.4.
Yeah.
It was encoded for 14.4 modems. And it was just neat to do. And it was, looking back on it now, it's amazing how quickly that it progressed. And we've seen that with MPEG-2. We've seen that with MPEG-4. You know, when MPEG-4 first started on the satellite companies, their HD looked like crap.
Oh, yeah.
And the encoders have gotten better and better and better, so the signal quality now is excellent, and they're pumping more channels into the same amount of bandwidth.
Yeah.
So it's just new ATSC version 3 is to me, is exciting. And it's a natural progression.
Yeah. Tripp, do you have anything else to say for the show before we close it tonight?
Before I go, I wanted to. I don't know how many people here are sort of interested in the broadcast side of things that Rabbit Ears represents. I haven't made the formal announcement yet, but I've added an interesting new feature. A friend of mine, a ham, his call sign is KB8U, wrote a utility that basically lets people have a tuner basically scan continuously at their end and submit it to a server. We just moved it onto the Rabbit Ears server. It's gone live. If you visit Rabbit Ears and you go to the Maps drop down and click Live Band Scan, you can actually see all of the tuners that we currently have on the system and basically a live readout of what's being received on each one, which is really cool for people who like to DX and distance signals.
What kind of equipment would one need for that? Just a feeder card and a PC?
Yeah, you need a it runs currently on the HD Home Run network attached to it.
Okay,
the software client is available for both Windows and Linux. I sort of prefer the Linux client, but Windows works as well.
Hey, I may be able to hook up and give you a heart rate area signal.
If you're interested in participating, once you have a chance to look at the map, just send me an email. And either I'll get you set up, or I'll put you in touch with Ross, and he'll get you set up.
Cool. Hey, I got one thing to announce, too, and we've been planning it, and we've talked about it for a long time here at Satellite Guys. It's user web space, where users can have their own personal web space on Satellite Guys servers. And I got the domain all set up. I'm just finishing working on the main page that gives you all the rules and information about it. But what's going to happen is... if you want space on Satellite Guy server, and let's say your trip, we give you space on the server, and you'd be set up, so it'd be tripinva.isasatguysfan.com. isasatguysfan.com is the address you would do it at. And just finishing getting that set up, but it's almost ready to roll out, and the server is running great. We've got plenty of space, plenty of bandwidth to go around. And we're getting ready to launch it. It's taken a little longer than I expected because we had some hard drive failures and some other things go down. And then real life at home with all this construction we got going on over here, it's taking my time away from the site a little bit. But we're almost ready to go.
For your luxury villa you got in the backyard there, Scott?
Yeah, it looks nice, don't it?
And you killed the news feed too, didn't you, today on the...
Yeah, we killed the Usenet news group feed today after running it for the past several years. We killed it just mainly for the fact that nobody posts satellite information there, and 90% of what's posted there was either spam or was really, really offensive content, and it became of no value to anybody. So we shut that off today after 7 years. So
yeah, I kind of hate to see it go, but I was kind of happy too. You know what I mean? Because I think I posted time to celebrate, but it was just. I hate to see it go, you know, newsfeed, you know, whatever, but I think they're declining anyway, and it just got to the point where just spam and a lot of, like, offensive stuff, cuss words.
And like, posts that were posted, like, 2 days ago that we already all saw.
Yeah, but it's junk.
Yeah. It had its place where it was good, but it's not good no more. And,
yeah, at one time it was great. It was, you know, I used to go to them, you know, other than Satellite Guys, I'd go there, you know, just myself, you know, and... Not through Silent Guys, but I hadn't been in probably 3 or 4 years, you know. So.
Yeah, so that's that. By the way, Ralph and Mike's show has started. There's a link in the free to air section, so you can click on and see their live video tonight. And we invite you to go check them out. If you do call them in, get on the air. Make sure you mention you're a Satellite Guy. Mike Cole has been spending a lot of time at Satellite Guys lately, and we enjoy having him there and his expertise. So go give him your support.
Well, we're going to end the show here, and I appreciate everybody who called in, Scott and Brian and Tripp, have you as a guest.
Thank you for having me.
And Dave, you called in from the road.
Hey, Tripp, before we go, is that new feature mentioned on the homepage?
I haven't formally announced it yet, but it is in the menu. So if you look at the front page and you hover over the maps section, it's the second option. It's called Live Band Scan.
Okay, cool. And that's rabbitears.info.
That's correct.
All right, cool. We'll have everybody check that out.
All right.
Well, everybody have a good night.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye. Yep, everybody join us next week, May 22nd, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another show of Satellite Nation. And we're going to try to, what does Dave call it, rock it out. But hopefully next week it'll be a little more organized. But we did really good, and I was really proud of it. So, and everybody's listening, go to the link on Silent Guys and tune to Mike Cole's show there and Ralph's show, and they're on video tonight. So check that out.
Yep.
So we enjoy it, everybody tuning in, and have a good night.
Good night.
Night.
Good night.